Hot round! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
Hot round!
I don't. What is hot round?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get you the ball.
Are you gonna get me the ball?
I'll get you the ball.
I hope he doesn't kill somebody.
Welcome in to 11 Personnel. Bath time is over. Now it's time for football talk. Adam Luckett, how are we doing?
Let's go. Glad to see you got Baby Roush under control. Now we can talk a little football, my man.
How's
week three, week four, week five? They're all running into each other yet?
Yeah. We're getting close to Mother's Day's around the corner, so you know, aptly timed. If Nick Roush was a player as a dad on the EA Sports video game, I would have a 99 in awareness because, I mean, I just dodged a piss missile. It went right over my shoulder. I felt like Keanu Reeves in The Matrix. It was
the daddy instincts kicking in.
Oh, man. It was gravity death-defying. Probably the most profound use of dad strength to date. And I've really made it a big hour going into this show. I made a bunch of Tennessee fans mad too. It's just, I feel like we're back in the saddle. Louisville is back on probation. Like,
what a busy day. Last 2 days, I guess you would say.
Well, I mean, hell, going back to Friday. Friday was a very newsy day. And, you know, we're not going to sit here and talk to you about if there's one thing I don't want to turn any of the things that I'm into is a long discussion on what do we think will happen when we don't know anything that will happen. But Friday you have Eli Capoluto saying, hey, we're kind of planning for school to be back up. We're planning to have classes this fall, which was a prerequisite for getting football back. And that followed Mitch Barnhart's letter to season ticket holders saying, hey, you know, we're planning for football at home in the fall. If things change, we'll adapt. But we're getting more and more good news out of market. And you saw Arkansas's AT, Juracek, I think is his name.
Hunter Juracek.
Yeah, and he kind of walked it back a little bit because he was like, well, I didn't say this is going to happen, but they're also operating under the, we're planning to come back mid-July and get ready for a football season. So, if nothing else, Adam Luckett, it's good to feel a little optimistic about where things stand when it comes to watching some ball this fall.
There's definitely been some momentum that has picked up last week or 2 weeks regarding just kind of everybody getting their ducks in a row, like being prepared once July gets here for have football practice and have everything kind of operating back to normal. I think that's kind of the operating expectation for everyone right now. I think even the SEC office in general is telling everyone that. Now, we did have a bit of news, which I kind of expect everybody to do this. AAC announced that their media days is going to be in a virtual setting. Mm. So I would expect the other conferences to kind of announce that here soon. I just don't see how you're going to throw 400 overweight media members down there in Atlanta to munch on buffet food all week and to talk to some overweight football coaches.
I mean, that would have been your time to hang out with your buddy Bobo, though. You could have been front row with Bob, just firing off questions at the College Football Hall of Fame. This could be your one shiny moment, Adam Luckett. It might get taken away.
It'll have to wait till next year. Don't plan on going anywhere. So
that would be unfortunate. But you know, you got to do what you got to do. I did see where the NCAA said, I don't know if it's NCAA or Sankey, but teams are going to get 6 weeks to prepare, regardless of when that is. I do feel like your thought like a month ago, like this could be, of all of the Adam Luckett I told you so's, the pushing the season back and not having any dead, so like moving like two or three games to the at the start of the year to the back end, I think this could be a big I told you so moment for Adam Luckett.
I think it's in play, man. I really do. I think it kind of gives them the best of both worlds because they can still have a kind of a traditional football season, but also they can buy themselves almost a month of time at the same in the same breath.
There was one idea that our boss threw out there that, like, you know, because here's – if you're only playing regional games just due to travel restrictions or whatever, like, what if you had an all-SEC schedule? And it would suck, but also this would be the best equipped Kentucky's ever been for an all-SEC schedule.
That's true.
Like,
but I think that's the tricky thing, man, when you start thinking about – the FCS teams banking on those paychecks.
Yeah.
Trying to schedule your games because everybody's got, you know, not everybody has 14 teams in their conference. Some teams have.
Right.
You know, you look at the American who just lost UConn. They're, I believe they're sitting at 11 right now. So it would, I just don't know how all that would work. But
right.
I do think there's probably going to be a push here after this, whenever this is over, when scheduling picks back up to kind of schedule more around you and not be playing, not have Oklahoma State play Oregon State kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. And I think just people in general, like playing teams you're close to, more fun, which is like in basketball. I think Kentucky's mm-hmm. ended up with West Virginia refereeing that Big 12 right. challenge.
Yeah. It's and then
like, play teams you're close to.
You know, a couple days ago, you saw Kansas concept. And Missouri pick up their series.
Oh, which why they don't play each other in football? I mean, they're both. Come on, just let each other duke it out. You know?
West Virginia Pitt the same way. I think they're supposed to play coming up here soon in a couple of years. That was the first time. That was kind of just a conference realignment. That's something that really didn't touch us here.
Uh-huh.
But because we kept the Louisville series, it didn't. I mean, it just made it even more important because they became an ACC school.
Right.
But for other places, like, that was a big thing about realignment was it ended some rivalries, some games you played, you know, your whole life, and then poof, it's gone.
I forgot about how good some of those Kansas-Missouri basketball games used to get to until the TJ brought up that old Mizzou rap song, which came out when we were in college. And it was of all of the college rap songs.
The one with the Frank Haith mention in it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It
was so bad. But they're, like, talking trash about Kansas the whole time. I'm like, oh, yeah. They used to, like, actually be competitive. And now I think of Missouri as, you know, not Vanderbilt, but, you know, I think of them as we need some muscle. You know, like, kind of just.
Yeah. The Mizzou, it's been a weird fit, I think anybody would agree, for them in the SEC.
Yeah, you know, that's a lot of them. The conference realignment certainly did that a lot.
I think A&M has been a more natural. Obviously, they had Johnny Football right away, so they
helped
hit a grand slam. And then, but just kind of that they've kind of built up like this little rivalry with LSU. And then you get Jimbo Fisher, who, you know, can mix it up with LSU and the other who's who in the SEC. So I think from their standpoint, it worked.
Arkansas.
Right, in Arkansas. That old Southwest rivalry where Missouri kind of came from the Big Eight, so they were playing. You know, Missouri grew up – if you're a Missouri fan, you grew up hating Nebraska in football, and you grew up hating Kansas in basketball. And now if you're – you know, if I was Missouri Adam instead of Kentucky Adam, I would – you know, the two teams I grew up hating the most, we wouldn't even play anymore. So that's obviously – that's a real tough spot to be in.
And, you know, speaking of teams we hate, Tennessee, we got a lot of Kentucky stuff to get to, but I want to start with Tennessee because Jeremy Pruitt's got a horseshoe stuck up his ass or something. He's just rolling in recruits right now. It's astounding, but I think the reason why they're doing so well in the recruiting trail right now, Adam Luckett, I don't have the list out in front of me, but they've got something like 8 dudes in a week. I mean, it's every 24.
Yeah, I think it's been 8 and 8 days now. I mean, it's just been
– Yeah. And they aren't bad guys either. Like, you got the 5-star linebacker. You got the 4-star JUCO running back. I mean, they are rolling in the dough right now. And the only logical explanation to this, Luckett, is that recruits are stuck quarantined now, and they don't even have the opportunity to see how awful Knoxville is. Nothing else makes sense.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing.
You know what proves your point on that? Of all these commits they've had, I think they're up to like 16, 17 in this class. I think they have 3 or 4 kids from Tennessee.
Yeah.
And well, it's not like Tennessee has a dry spell right now. There's plenty of Power 5 caliber that's probably going to produce 20, 25 guys in that state this year. And they only have 3 or 4. They're doing most of their damage in Alabama. I think they got 5, 6, 7 guys from Alabama. That's where Pruitt's from. He's got high school ties, of course, the Hoover, where he when he was a coach. His dad was a coach in another Alabama high school. And, of course, he came from Alabama as their defensive coordinator. So he's got a lot of deep Alabama ties. So they're really cashing in there in Alabama. And then they're getting some other places kind of just spreading out. And we've seen this, especially with Tennessee before. Butch Jones, in a second full recruiting class, had the number 4 class in the country.
Mm-hmm.
They got on a roll in the summer, and they just gobbled up a bunch of commitments. Especially when you get hot like that, there's probably some guys that maybe you want to take a slow roll with, but you're just taking it because it keeps building up momentum.
Oh, it's the same thing that, like, when Kentucky was number 1 for
– Right, in 2014.
Yeah, for, like, 24 hours, you know. When you're hot, you squat, and you just keep them churning out.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that – is going to be interesting is, you know, I kind of – it was tongue-in-cheek, like, oh, wait till they see Knoxville. Once these places open back up, they're going to be able to visit other places.
Right, and there's a lot of guys that are high flip possibilities too.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not just, oh, wait, just wait to see them flip, because that's like the old classic, like, recruiting hater thing to say. Mm-hmm. But I do think that, like, they're going to be in a tricky spot because, at least in Stoops' case, right now – that you just have to be like really picky and choosy. But you also want to get a couple guys to get some momentum, which they've done over the last few weeks. But you could be Tennessee stuck in a corner where you could keep rolling, but you don't have any spots. But then you get a couple late flips, and then, you know, you're stuck up a creek without a paddle.
Yeah, I mean, they've got one guy who's 10 guy. His name's escaping me. He's an outside linebacker from Chaminade. So he's down there in Miami.
It's the Terrence guy. Terrence.
Shannon, maybe, something like that.
Yeah. I don't know why I wanted to say Ferguson. That was the kid that played basketball, right?
Yes. I think there's a Ferguson, but you're right, in that class. Let's see if I can pull him up here.
I saw his Twitter name is Terrence with an E, not Terrence with an A, which that's pretty good branding. But, yeah, you know,
Terrence Lewis is their top guy out of Chaminade. And then Dylan Brooks. It's top 25, 5-star line, or another defensive end. Oh, then Lewis was a linebacker, excuse me, not defensive end. But anyway, but that Brooks kid is probably – Auburn was kind of considered the favorite, and Tennessee kind of came in there and got him. Mm-hmm. But they're still going to have to deal with Alabama there.
Yeah.
And then you on that deep South Florida area, which we're going to get into later with some of these guys in Kentucky's
right.
having the portal. But that's just – it's kind of so like fun. The Wild West. Yeah, you just
it's so fun,
everybody's
man.
Everybody's down there recruiting, and they are known to flip. I mean, we just saw in Miami's class last year, they had more decommitments than they had commitments.
Yeah.
Or signees. So stuff can get weird down there. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, Salmonelli is one of the exceptions to the rule where, like,
right.
he committed to Miami when he first got there and then flipped and didn't really do anything else. So that was – he was an exception. He still flipped from one place to another. But Tennessee, you know, let them have their fun right now. You know, Barrett Sally saying they're going to win the East within
just,
3 years.
It's the flavor of the month right now.
Oh, yeah. It's like, you know what? Tennessee, enjoy your time off. Congrats. You won the offseason. Well
done.
Tennessee,
right now the goal is they'll have a freshman this year by the name of – I believe it's Harrison Bailey. He's this kid out of Marietta, Georgia, won the top level in Georgia, Mr. Football, won the state championship last year. He's like their quarterback coming in. And a lot of it's going to be tied to how good he ends up being. If he ends up being good, they're going to be in a really good spot. If he's not, they could find themselves in trouble. But
right.
a lot of times when you're in a new staff, that quarterback, that first big quarterback recruiting win, that how that goes is going to depend how yours or your early season goes. Like we saw with Kentucky and Drew Barker, it didn't really go well, and Stoops was in a bind.
Or you could just be an awful coach and you could get your quarterback like Butch Jones had with now is the I can't think of his name now.
Joshua Dobbs.
Yeah, like you hit the nail on the head and you win some games that you just physically overpower people, but shows you're a bad coach. I think, I mean, to your point, like Jared Garantano, he isn't going to win you games this year, even though I thought it was funny that there were only three kids in that recruiting class, three of the top 20 quarterbacks that hadn't transferred, and him and Juwan Pass were two of them.
Right.
Which is – that's just wild. Two out of the three that hadn't transferred. I think the other one was like was KT on Thompson until he ended up announcing he's going to Virginia. Yeah. So,
I mean, we can get that later, but I have a list of schools right here. Just Power Five projected grad transfer starters, and it's in the double digits. So that's becoming the new norm. Like, quarterback recruiting never stops. So you can try in high school, but you're also going to get a chance to recover your misses by hitting this portal. And we've seen Kentucky do it. Kentucky's going to have two quarterbacks on the roster that started at different Power Five schools for their team next year.
Hey, and so that's why I like, when it comes to people complaining about the regular one-time transfer rule, I'm like, you guys, you all are already doing this. Like, what? And you're going to complain about college free agency? Like, you're already a success because of it. So why are we in here griping and moaning about it? Let's just let the show go on. But before I stray too far away, I just wanted to say, well done, Tennessee. You're a great flavor of the month. Can't wait to see you in a little while. But in the meantime, Kentucky, they've had some roster moving back and forth, both in adding and subtracting players. Starting Friday, you had the first of three players into the portal in Kayvon Butler, the nose guard from Toledo, Day-Day Hawkins from Chaminade Madonna, the school you mentioned earlier that's Fort Lauderdale. I think they're actually technically Broward County. But, you know, it might as well be Miami. And then
they're in Hollywood, Florida, which is kind of between Fort Lauderdale and Miami.
Right, right. And then today, B.J. Alexander, who I believe he wasn't Chaminade Madonna, was he?
He was Madonna, too, but he transferred into Madonna, I think, last year.
Gotcha.
See, what happens down there in South Florida is they don't have a transfer rule. So you can leave from school to school. And sometimes what these kids do, they just follow the coach. So if a coach is at somewhere, goes to another school, they'll just go with the coach.
Man, that's so surprising that they have kids that aren't firm on their commitments all the time. Wow.
Right.
I wonder where they get that. I wonder where that culture comes from.
And a lot of the kids from football, like technique and how to play the game standpoint, they come in very raw. And I think we've seen that here at UK.
Yeah, a lot of athleticism.
With a lot of potential, but it's low floor, high ceiling kind of guys where the variance in them is a lot. And you kind of have to spend a lot of time in developing these guys. And sometimes they just get passed up. And I think that's what's kind of happening here with some of these guys we're seeing right now.
So in Alexander's case, he just lost out to his teammates. Bryce Oliver just manned him up.
Bryce Oliver. Same class.
Alan Daly, same thing. They're just
– same class. They're all in the same class.
And they needed outside wide receivers, and two of them emerged, and one of them didn't. And that was Alexander.
Alexander was the highest-rated recruit out of both of them. And Daly and Oliver were both kind of late additions. Oliver late in the first signing class, kind of came out of nowhere. And then Daly late in the first late signing period.
It also goes to show you, too, that, like – so in Oliver's case, he wasn't ranked high because I believe he got hurt and he was a basketball player. So he didn't do like all of the, you know, combines and all that kind of stuff. The one that I don't get with Daly, I mean, Daly played with Bo Nix. You'd think you'd have a bunch of eyes on him, you know?
I think there was a grade issue there. I don't know if that's ever been like fully proved or whatnot, but that's the only reason that made sense to me. How could this kid that had 1,600 receiving yards on a state championship Saint champion team, the highest level of Alabama, and 20-something touchdowns. How is he just picking from a random amount of schools? I think there was probably – I would assume there was some grade type stuff going on there.
Even that, like, that happened. But, like, I could see where that would be why not other bigger schools got in on it, but I also don't know why that wouldn't, like, you still wouldn't have a higher recruiting ranking. But we don't need to be picking that apart for now. But I think my overall point is that, you know, Marvin Alexander was running with the threes last year, and that wasn't really going to change. The writing was going to be on the wall. Mm-hmm. He will not – I doubt he's the last receiver will be one of these fatalities.
If you look at the roster right now, I counted it up last night, and with the news that Alexander is gone from today, recording this on Monday evening, I believe they're – now this – I have Zach Johnson as a scholarship player, so that could change.
You got it, but
I'm at 88 right now. It'd be 87 if Johnson wasn't a scholarship player. So you need bare minimum two more to get down to 85.
It's hard to, because I did this at the beginning of spring trying to count, and I did it like four or five times, and I kept getting different numbers. And I'm like, okay, you're like,
right.
A, you're just either a bad counter, or B, like there's some people who are kind of on that fence, like, you know, with the kickers and stuff, like, what are they going to do with them? That kind of
thing. Right, yeah.
But, you know, there's going to be two or three more guys that are going to be fatalities. In Day-Day Hawkins' case, his personality was fun on the sideline, but I think it didn't take a rocket science.
He was the one I was – yeah. But he was getting close to getting PT. Like, he was there. He was kind of in the mix.
And then they got Josiah Hayes, and then they got – like, they got a bunch of dudes. And I think it was kind of like – you know, you either get with it or get lost. And moving Pascal down, I think, pretty much eliminated
him. Yeah, that hurt him for sure.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Instead of being, you know, splitting reps, it probably wasn't going to happen. So, Day-Day was up. I think the only surprise is Kayvon Butler. And it could be a slight surprise in that, like, I mean, Butler was highly recruited. Ohio State, it was one of those where they were – you know, Ohio State was taking calls until the day.
Alabama showed some interest for a long time in him.
Yeah, yeah. And Kentucky wins out for the Toledo kid in the 11th hour. He redshirts last year. He's the third nose behind Bohanna and then McCall. But he would have 2 years kind of behind them. And luckily you can weather that storm. You know what Freddie said, and kind of my understanding too, is it was all a family-type deal where – he had a grandparent pass away, and it was one of those things that, you know, he wants to be closer home. So
I would look for Toledo or Bowling Green if that's the case.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, how much closer to home, like, because, you know.
It can mean a lot of different things.
Yeah, for, like, Mike Warren and Hudson, they were both Toledo kids who wanted to be closer to home. They ended up at Cincinnati. That's had the feeling of that's a big transfer destination right now. They really reaped the rewards from that.
Well, that was the thing, because Hudson transferred from Michigan, and Ann Arbor's closer to Toledo than Cincinnati is. Ann Arbor's like 45 minutes from Toledo.
Yeah.
So, and that was Harbaugh's big thing when he transferred. He's like, you're closer here. Because there was a big – because last summer, like, Harbaugh and Fickell were, like, trading Barb through the media regarding that. And
it was fun to watch because Harbaugh had a good point. And I hate that I did the there, but Hudson brought up, I was struggling with mental health things and mental health problems.
Yeah, that's mental health thing.
And I couldn't get services out at Michigan. And it's like, you know, you don't want to be the one out here questioning a kid's mental health problems, but also, like, that's a convenient thing to bring up now if you never brought it up before. So I don't see that being a scenario. Vince even tweeted out, you know, I support you wherever you go at the next level. And I think that's all you can do when you're Kentucky. If you're Harbaugh at Michigan, you could probably be a little bit chestier, even though that, you know, like, he knew he wasn't going to get Hudson again. That's the only thing that, like, didn't make any sense about Harbaugh's thing, is you're kind of cutting off your nose to spite your face because, oh, you win the little battle and he doesn't get to play.
That's Harbaugh, though, man. That's just who he is.
he just dug his heels down, you know, the kids these days, blah, 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 blah.
But he was also the one, too, that said they should all have one time transfer where they can go anywhere immediately. Like, Harbaugh was the first coach to come out and say that. So he kind of goes back and forth on it, man.
Are you an anti or a for Harbaugh, or do you have go one way or the other?
My whole thing with Harbaugh in Michigan, I think it's just proven what kind of job Michigan is. It's just not as good as I think people think it is, especially when Ohio State's operating at a clip they're operating at right now. and they're operating as a national power, one of the 3 to 4 best programs in the country, competing for national championships every year. When they are doing that, it's hard. It's really hard for Michigan because the expectation is, hey, we want to win national titles. You haven't won the title you didn't share since World War II. you look in their history when just Big Ten titles, Ohio State has been very much more consistent. People look back at like the 10-year war was when they had both Schimbecker, Beckler, and Woody when they went, you know, back to back. But for most of the history, Ohio State's had the upper hand. So Ohio produces more players. Ohio State kind of has a bigger brand right now. I think what Harbaugh is doing at Michigan is like any competent coach or a good coach, that's what you kind of can expect them to do. But when Ohio State's producing at that level, and then James Franklin's got Penn State producing at the same time at top levels, it can be hard. They can be like a Tennessee where you're stuck in a division where Florida and Georgia just have a little bit more resources than you because you're recruiting the same areas, but they're closer to the players. You know what I'm saying? I think it can just be hard for them. Just they're kind of landlocked in that tough division, and that's just what it is. You look at Harbaugh, I mean, the results have been there. I mean, he's winning 9 to 10 games every year. Yeah. The thing with them is just they haven't had the big wins, and those should come. Like, they should get some bounces. But that's not why they hired him. They hired him to beat Ohio State, and that's not what he's doing.
Right, right.
So he's always judged through those lenses.
Which I'm interested to get to. We're going to get into your top 25 a little bit later on. And so we'll be able to get maybe not more into that, but it's certainly reflective in your top 25. You got Michigan, 16th. That feels about where Michigan is. You know?
And then they just lost. They had 10 guys drafted, which I was surprised by. Like, going into the draft weekend, I was not in my head thinking I'm going to see 10 Michigan guys go off the board.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. So that doesn't help the situation at all.
And one of them wasn't Shea Patterson.
One of them wasn't Shea Patterson. And three or four of them were off the offensive line, and their offensive line, if you look at some of the metrics, just, well, you know, nothing special.
I mean, Stanford Steve was, like, calling them soft. which, you know, I guess with some of those things, you can just look at the measurables and be like, hey, this – it should be there. The recruiting rankings, you know, so – it adds up that they should be good, even though they weren't good as a unit. Maybe as individuals, they can be better. But we don't need to get more into the Michigan offensive line or anything like that right now. I want to bring up Kentucky's commitments because they got started Friday, and I don't think they're going to be slowing down anytime soon.
Doesn't look like it. Looks like they're about to reel some off here.
Yeah, yeah. The first up was Khalil Sanders, the dude.
That was the one that came out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't on anybody's radar, I don't think.
None at all. So that was a surprise from Alabama.
Huntsville.
Yeah, a John Summerall joint. You know, Summerall's all about that deep south. When we say out of nowhere, a lot of it's because there's not a whole lot out there on him besides his tape and a few small offers because the big boys haven't gotten in on him yet.
When I saw that, I was like, okay, this guy's got to be like in a small town. Maybe missed the year of football or something, or didn't go to camps. Then I do some digging, and like he plays for a team in Huntsville. Huntsville's not a small, I mean, it's decent sized town.
Well, it's
at the top level, so he's playing against good competition week in and week out. He's 6'5, 270, 280 pounds. He plays both sides of the ball, plays offensive tackle and defensive end. And I mean, he looks the part. So I'm curious how that really happened. Because you kind of do some digging, and the offers are there. Like both of Virginia schools, Virginia Tech offered him recently. Indiana's in on him, and then every prominent like Group of Five team in the South: Memphis, Southern Miss, Troy. List goes on and on. All those schools are offered him and heavily recruiting him. So how he, even with those, he should at least be a low 3-star bare minimum. Kind of slip through the rankings. I'd be interested to find that out.
Well, I know how he didn't slip through Summerall. It's they attended the same high school.
Is that right?
Yeah, and that's where the connection was there. You know, of course, Summerall's going to know somebody at his old school. But nevertheless, you can certainly expect I know people are like, oh, is he going to flip? That'll be a worry. But you can certainly believe that there will be some big things come calling. Okay, good. 110% committed. But, like, your Mississippi States, that seems like a prime.
Yeah, that's why I was surprised not to see them after them.
Yeah. But so Sanders was the first one. That was sandwiched in between two transfer portal announcements. And then Sunday night, we have – look, there's never been a time when I've been – got a heads up that there's a commitment, and I couldn't find it on social media. The kid, his name isn't on anything at all.
Took me a bit to find him too, man.
I mean, that was tough.
Some of these guys, you just have to go to the coaches who they follow and try to go through the names and see if it kind of matches his name in a certain way. Or find what position he plays, because usually in their bio they'll have their position.
Yeah, they'll have their position, but they won't have, like, my name. Mm-hmm. Which I always like some of the coaches who are like – it was actually Brian Landis retweeting somebody, former Frederick Douglass, now at Georgia State. It's like, hey, put your name in your Twitter profile and on your highlights, say what season it is. I don't know if your Savage season was your sophomore or your junior year, which I absolutely love. And now the name of the recent kid, Armand
Scott.
Yes. Receiver from Euclid, Ohio, not Euclid Avenue. That would be too close. But I love that since he's a big kid from Cleveland, immediately Dorian Baker.
The Dorian Baker comps are overflowing.
Just because it's
– And Cleveland Heights. And if you look on the map in Cleveland Heights where Dorian Baker was from, uh-huh, and Euclid, I mean, they're like a hop, skip, a jump away.
See, here's the thing, though, with like – we are dumb humans. And like it's just – everything is much more palatable with an easy comparison. The basketball – It's the easiest because you have such a large sample size with Calipari teams because they're basically, you know, a new 10 each year. So you have a lot of different pick and choose from.
See it in the draft every year.
Yeah. In football, though, it's not as easy. So it's probably not a good thing that we're – like, comparing a guy to Dorian Baker isn't exactly going to warm the hearts of Kentucky fans across the Big Blue Nation.
And I think it's important, Dorian Baker coming out of high school was listed as an athlete, too.
Was he really?
Mm-hmm. Because I think there was kind of a he could move down to play tight end kind of thing.
Oh, I see.
But when you watch this Scott kid play, obviously 6'3", he towers over every corner he plays. So all you're seeing him run on tape are hitches and goes for the most part.
Right.
But when he gets the ball in his hands, he doesn't run like a 6'3", 205, 210-pound guy like you used to see in high school. Usually it's some of the lumbering – like Isaiah Cummins, for example. When he caught the ball, it was more just like get north and south and go.
Mm-hmm.
This kid's got some change of direction. He returns a punt where he's bouncing back and forth. The first highlight I put on this in the post, the film room post that went up today at KentuckySportsRadio.com was him. He catches a deep ball. He immediately stops on a dime, sees the corner overruns, he cuts left, runs about 15 yards, the corner catches up on him again, and then he makes another cut to the right and coasts into the end zone. Like, he can really run with the football in his hands. So that, to me, when you get that in an outside receiver, that's reason to be excited. And then, of course, he makes some big-time catches. Like, he makes his snag, one-hand grab with his right hand, all full extension on a deep ball where he doesn't really slow down, and then has some blocking in there too that you would expect a guy his size to be able to bring at that level.
I think it's like just from more of a big picture standpoint. Mm-hmm. I mean, not only is it notable what he can actually do in the football field, obviously that's first and foremost, but from how you recruit the position, like you're starting to check some boxes.
Why I wanted to bring up with these last two classes, what they're doing in the wide receiver.
Spot. Yeah. You're getting a 6-foot guy who can, you know, maybe do both in Chancey Magwood. Mm-hmm. You play him inside, you play him outside, but just got a nice set of skills. They can do a lot of different things. You get one big badass who can go up and make some plays, who can be physical. And then you got
Darryl Brett on the outside.
And then you get a slot receiver that mm-hmm. is a burner. And that's what they're trying to do when DeKale Crowder – announces his decision Sunday. And I know that right now, like, I think things are looking pretty good on Kentucky's end, but there's also the ever-looming Oklahoma factor. And, like, you know, they have pretty good quarterbacks. They sling the ball around the yard a lot. So, having that hometown.
And they're about to get the number one quarterback in the class of 2021. That's coming soon.
No, that kid's going to Maryland. All right.
You think so? I don't know. Well, with that kid announcing today that he's going to LSU, the Nussmeier,
yeah,
that's kind of – that was Oklahoma's number one backup plan.
I do love, though, that, like, just the trio. And, like, basically it's a huge day for Maryland just to be in the top three for that kid, you know.
Mm-hmm. They're good, they're doing some things recruiting Maryland.
Yeah, you know, 2-3 years from now, you know.
But, yeah, they got to take some lumps before they get there.
Yeah,
yeah. But just look back at these last two classes. Like, last class you get Isaiah Cummings, who's like this – not much separate – like, he's not creating a lot of separation, but you can throw it to him in the red zone. He's going to be a jump ball kind of guy, but he's also going to be like a kick-ass blocker on the edge and a guy you can move in motion and do different things with him in the run game. But then you got two kind of do-it-all guys, I think, in Sanders and Khalil Branham that you can kind of move around. I think they can play outside and inside. You can kind of find a spot for them. Then you get in this next class, you get your inside guy with Magwood. Now, Magwood, I don't think he's going to be a guy that's burning people deep and not, but he's going to be a guy kind of like they use Deuce Johnson, 3rd and 6. Okay, well, you're running an option route. We're going to trust you 9 out of 10. You're going to beat this little slot corner to the spot. You're going to be open, and it's going to be an automatic throw, easy pitch and catch. And then you get Armand Scott, who's got, like, this deep ball potential. Like, he's got kind of – like, I described him as a high-floor, high-ceiling prospect because I think he can come in and do some things bare minimum just from a blocking standpoint and physical size standpoint. But you see how he catches the ball away from his body, how he runs with the ball. I think – he's got some things that, whoa, man, this kid can really be something. And then you Dekel Crowdis, who is a typical slot receiver, but he's got, like, not to get in the player comp kind of situation, but he's got that, like, Jeff Badette speed where they can run him on all those deep posts. They can play him in the slot, but they can also move him outside and use him as, like, to take the top off the defense receiver that they really haven't had since Badette left. And Crowdis is a composite 4-star receiver, like, legitimate. Every ranking has him as a blue chip.
Right.
They haven't gotten one of those. And I don't think – when's the last one they've gotten in the Stoops era? If you consider, like, Lynn and Michael Drennan in that same regard, but they're more of kind of like
– they're the athlete.
Flash players. Yeah. You know when you bring them in, you're using them at Wildcat, you're going to use them around a lot. But Crowdis, I think, is specifically a receiver, you know. He's coming in to play receiver.
I don't think they have gotten one because some of those early, those 14 guys, they
Richardson,
had some.
And Javonte Richardson was one.
Yeah. I don't know if he was, like, all across the board 4-star either. Like,
I think he was like a top 250, top 300 prospect.
Yeah, that's right. It's real shame about that kid, though.
But that's just – whatever happened there.
Yeah, yeah. But that's a really good point, Luckett. And the reason, like – the thing that I just what speaks to Crowdis's talent level is they have the 5-star challenge, the Big Rivals camp down in Atlanta every year, and that's, you know, put on hold for now. But Rivals, they wisely did a few years back. They were like, hey, why don't we invite all of the top kids to our camps? And, well, you know, it's almost kind of like the Nike does the opening, but Rivals has, like, exclusive access to that content and stuff. So they've made it to where, like, they can really, I mean, it's a genius idea. And it's become a really big event. Like, I would even put it up there as even more prestigious than, like, the opening and, like, the Elite 11 stuff, because it just doesn't get the same kind of internet clout, the ESPN stuff, like the Rivals stuff does, for whatever reason. But it's almost all seniors to be, except Crowdis got invited going into his junior season. Like, that's when you know the kid's legit. And he performed well there. He didn't stick out like a sore thumb. Now, what happened last year at IMG? I don't know.
Yeah, that's the question. Like, what kind of went wrong there?
And
that could play into the fact why Kentucky might be the heavy, heavy favorite too, that maybe it's just away from home type thing.
Yeah, well, and it could be a he does better when he's got a supportive environment around him too. Like, you know, with Lynn Bowden, I'm not saying they held his hand, but it certainly helped that you had the head coach and the big dog in your corner, you know, whenever who were willing to give the benefit of the doubt if things didn't go right according to plan.
And to give him – like, they gave Lynn a lot of rope too.
Right.
When he was young. I think that's something not a lot of people talk about. But, I mean, we all remember the Lynn Bowden tweets. Like, everybody forgets about him now. But following him on Twitter with, like
– Oh, yeah.
Where he would just say some weird cryptic stuff all the time.
Yeah, middle of the night too, like right. 3 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems like light years away now.
Did you see that Lynn tweet? I hated getting that text.
Yes, I told people like stop following these. They like stop following a 19-year-old kid on Twitter. Like, gee, like just let him be a 19-year-old kid. But like that's why coaches get paid. That's why Mark Stoops is making $4 million to handle all of that stuff. Stop reading it. Stop looking at it.
And I think to our overall point is that Mark Stoops will be a little bit more generous with that versus at a place like Oklahoma, you know.
Yes.
He ain't got time for that. They'll just go to somebody else, you know, like it doesn't matter. So I do feel pretty good about where Kentucky stands with Crowdis. And that would be a big get. Now, obviously, I think receivers more so than any other position, you know, receivers got a reputation. That's going to be a recruitment that wouldn't end with a commitment. I think that's pretty obvious.
Yeah, I mean, once the season starts, they're going to be business taken, I would imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I was looking at just the state of Kentucky recruiting here recently.
Oh.
Like, obviously, that 2018 class was loaded.
Yeah.
Like, with J.J. Weaver, Casey. Like, Kentucky didn't get, like, any of the top six guys. You know, they missed on Wandell Robinson, and there was some other big-time guys.
Kids that went to Notre Dame and Alabama.
Jacob Lacey from Bowling Green went to Notre Dame.
Tanner Bowles
from Glasgow went to Alabama. But then I started looking at – in, like, Louisville hasn't – like, I think Jordan Watkins was top 10. But other than that, the last 3 to 4 years, they have struck out on all these guys. And then you're looking at this class coming up. Like, it seems like if Kentucky can get Crowdis, get Jagger Burton, like, they're going to get their fair share of guys. But – Louisville hasn't got – I mean, I was surprised to see that because you don't really think about it much, but, like, they're kind of striking out on all these guys.
I don't even think Meekins was a top 10 kid.
He was. I think he was 11th.
Yeah. But there's another kid. I thought you were going to mention this one that could pop off this week. I don't know if you follow the crystal ball as closely as some others, but there's been 5 predictions as of today that Lavelle Wright – is going to Kentucky. And, you know, I've been hearing some things too. So it smells like Lavelle Wright might be the next one to get those dice out. All North signs Harden. Are kind of point towards that. And I had a buddy who coaches in the area, and I used to say he was full of it when he would tell me he's got this guy that he saw that's going to play D1. And the one I called the most BS on was when he coached Jordan Watkins as a freshman. And he was like, oh, this kid, he's going to be the next best thing since sliced bread. And, of course, he ends up going, you know, playing Power 5 college football. The next biggest one he told me about was Lavelle Wright during Wright's sophomore year. The way he was described to me is I was like, so is he like a fast guy or a power guy? And it was both. he gets north-south in a hurry, had 1,800 yards last year, 25 touchdowns. Tennessee was actually really hot and heavy on him early. I know Purdue got in the mix with him some. And Louisville tried. I think they might have been a little too late to get into the North Harden party, which, you know, Oxendine, that's another big in-state kid too. We'll miss out on him. But,
yeah, we talked about Oxendine, how, like, everybody talked about him like he was –
The best
ever. Yeah, right. So I think that obviously it's going to help Kentucky big time in the recruitment of these other guys.
Because if they do end up getting Lavelle right, hey, it would just be cool. When was the last time Kentucky had a running back from Kentucky?
That's a good question.
It's
been a bit.
I was trying to think of one.
They had Quentin Baker committed for a little bit, but that didn't last.
No, and he that turned out to be for the benefit. Because in the '80s, that's what all those Jerry Claiborne backs that played with Freddie, they were all a bunch of badasses, and they were all from Kentucky. Mark Higgs from Owensboro, Al Baker from Ashland. Like, you had a lot of dudes from within the state that were really mm-hmm. talented playing Kentucky. Andy Murray's from Louisville. So, I'm trying to think, because, like, on those 07 teams, you know,
it's been a while.
I mean, was Anthony White, was he from Kentucky?
No, he's from Ohio.
I mean,
I'm going through some classes right now, and because even in my class, like, I played at St. X, and we have Vic Anderson, but he ended up going to Louisville.
And so Vic Anderson, Deuce played at Boston College.
Yeah, so those were those were two for the state of Kentucky from a running back team. Miles Simpson would be the last one, and he moved positions.
Yeah, he played linebacker his whole career. So. Man, that's pretty wild. So if Kentucky does get Lavelle Wright, hey, it would just be cool to have a Kentucky, especially when running backs have been as good as they have been, that Kentucky's found elsewhere. It also, is the kind of next kind of back they need to get, because they've gotten speed with the last couple classes.
Right.
So it'd be good to get kind of a bigger body in there. He's about 6'1", you know, plays real good pad level for his size. But is a big kind of mow some dudes down kind of back.
Before Simpson, I mean, you're looking at Alfonso Smith kind of area. It's been that line. It's kind of crazy when you start thinking about it. But
I knew one of those Woodson backs was from Kentucky. So that would be the first running back in 15 years to commit. Just to even commit. Because he would have been like 04, 05.
Yeah, I think he was 04. He was either 04, 03. I want to say 04.
So almost 20. Yeah,
it's pretty crazy when you think about it. That'll be a nice little nugget to drop when that if it happens.
Yeah, man. But and to that point too, that we mentioned about Ox being big for that recruitment, you get right. His teammate Jordan Lovett had 15 picks last year. He's got all the regional kind of offers with Cincinnati, Louisville, Purdue.
They're in good position to pick up six of the top eight prospects in the state of Kentucky right now.
Pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good.
You can do that every year. That's pretty good.
The dice are indeed hot, as we like to say. But before we get to the end of this episode, actually, you know what? Let's get to the good stuff, the meat and potatoes, the big picture stuff. Because I think we just set a record for recruiting ever discussed on a podcast that wasn't around signing day. So good job, Luckett. We did it.
There you go.
All right, I'm looking at your top 25, and first off, I would like to say that I appreciate that you the look you took at your top 25. You're like, I don't want to do the week one top 25, because week one top 25s, it's all about it's basically building your stock on hype. So this is based off of how you believe people will produce at the end of the year,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know why that's not the norm, but it's definitely gotten away from that. And I'm just going to start at the back and mention a few surprises. In the first big one I see, now there's some that are kind of, you think USC is actually going to be good? Which I'm kind of with you, though, just because Slovis played so well. And they were able to keep Graham Harrell. And, we saw what Virginia Tech did. But the one that's just really pops off the page, Mack Brown and the North Carolina Tar Heels? What?
Yeah, that was one surprise. When I start doing the schedule, it just – in the ACC play, man, it just sets up well for them. Because they're going to be really good on offense. They got a really good quarterback.
They're in the Coastal. And
they're in the Coastal. And they get Virginia Tech at home and everything else. You kind of look at that division. Virginia's reloading.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh. I mean, they're kind of the same every year. They get Pittsburgh at home. Who else is in that division to kind of escape? Duke. They don't scare me at Duke. Carolina's going to have a better roster. So you kind of go down and look at it, and it seems like a year where they can really strike and do something. So that did surprise me, because I've kind of been off on them a little bit. But when I went through the schedule, it's like, well, this might just be a year for Mac to really get out and make some noise.
I would love that, because Mack Brown's one of those guys that I never
you see what they're recruiting right now.
Oh, yeah. They're making out like
gangbusters. They're kicking major butt.
And he was one of those guys, I wouldn't say I didn't like him at Texas, but I just never thought he did anything very good in particular. Mm-hmm. But I like him at North Carolina just because it North Carolina having any sort of value in the sport of football is just hilarious to me, which I'm sure many people say about Kentucky football being good at all. But it just it's a fun novelty for me. And to see the joy that Mac Brown had. What game was it that they won at the wire? It wasn't the South Carolina game, was it, when he was just, like, crying on the field? It might have been because it was
– I think it was that first one.
Yeah, because it was his first win, and they won in dramatic fashion.
Like, and it was an upset. Like, not many people were thinking they were going to win that game.
And so, yes, I want to see them do well. And that Coastal is just such a bad division. There's nothing – you know, it's Virginia Tech's in that, right? So, like, pretty much it's going to come down to those two.
Virginia Tech in Miami. I mean, Miami's always the wild card. If they get their stuff together, they're obviously going to have the most talent of anybody in that division. But it's they never had their stuff together. So,
one team
– white gave them.
I don't necessarily disagree with you on – you have Utah at 21. I just will never – like, that's kind of where they are in the top 25. But they officially submitted themselves. They are never real. They are never legit after losing back-to-back Pac-12 championships. I will never believe in them until they win it. Like, bet against them no matter what. Like, they're done to me. Absolutely done.
They are more of a case of – they just taking advantage of a – conference and division in general that's just a mess right now.
And they play defense and run the football.
Yeah.
And they're gonna have Jake
Bentley defense special teams. Right.
And like manage the game and be just fine. So
and they have a good home field advantage. Like it's usually bad weather. They usually gets pretty rowdy in there and you come in there and you better be ready to fight. If you're not ready to fight them, they're gonna run all over your ass. So and they're just kind of built to win 8-9 games every year, especially in that conference.
Luckett, I love that you have Kentucky in here at number 20 because did you get many tweets of people saying, "Oh, Kentucky Homer, of course he's got Kentucky in the top 25."
I didn't really get that many. I was surprised. I thought I was going to get a lot.
You should have just said Tennessee, not a top 25 team. Kentucky is, and then you would have had
Kentucky 20. Tennessee, unranked.
It really is.
At Vol Twitter.
Man, like, and you don't even have to say, like, it's amazing how they'll find
you. Crazy, man.
It really is. But I think, like, I want you to explain why it's not a homer take to put them in there, but, like, that's what we talk about every week is you kind of look at the schedule and it's like, well, they should win at least 8 of these games in here.
Listen, like, Tennessee and Kentucky, I think this year you could have a conversation where they're kind of – like, they're right there together.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the schedule, he's got to go to Oklahoma.
Right.
In the non-conference where Kentucky has to go to Louisville. I think you would rather take the Louisville game over the Oklahoma game. Tennessee has to play Alabama. So – and then they got to go – I believe at Arkansas is their other crossover. So that's good. But other than that, I mean, it's just tough. They got to go to Georgia. Kentucky gets Georgia at home. They get Florida at home. But they, I mean, Florida's like as big as a bugaboo Tennessee's been to Kentucky, that's what Florida's been to Tennessee in the same amount of time. Like they have one win in the last 18 tries or something.
Right.
So you just look at the schedule, like it looks like a, you know, a 7-5, 8-4 type season. Like if Pruitt gets them to 8-4, I think that'd be a really, really good coaching job. That'd be might be a step forward for him, I think, and for them as a program. Then you could talk about them in 2021 as really like,
a big year for
them. Yeah. But
Tennessee is like every other like Tennessee and Texas. They're always in Nebraska, they're always back. Notre Dame at least got past that, you know, by you know, being like 9-10 win about every year and then having your playoff run every 4 years. You know, they had the championship 13, they go to the playoff 2 years ago. So they're in a nice little groove, but these other teams, the proverbial backs, which Are you saying that Texas is back? Is that what I'm hearing here? Top 10 finish for the Horns?
Yeah, I mean, I just like – I think their offense is going to be really good. Like, I don't know, like, what Sam Ellinger will be as a pro, but, like, he's a really, really good college quarterback, and they're going to score a lot of points in that conference. And then you look at their schedule, Like, they have to go to LSU, but they get LSU kind of a perfect time. Early in the season, LSU lost, you know, a bunch. In Texas, you know, they've recruited well. It's just, can they get that defense together? Herman's bringing in two new coordinators. If they hit on both these coordinators, like, they're going to have a chance to make the playoff. So I am buying on Texas this year. I think we jumped the shark with them kind of last year.
Right.
Especially
right.
after they beat Georgia in that Sugar Bowl, when really they were probably a year away. And so they took some lumps last year. Now they have the senior quarterback, Ellinger. It's time for them to strike.
Getting Chris Ash as a defense coordinator, good move to bring the Ohio State band back together. I think the familiarity really plays out well for them. I think that's a very underrated aspect of success. Like, continuity, that's something Stoops is big on, you know, like
and you look at all that, you know, obviously Herman from Ohio State, and then their offensive coordinator was originally at Oklahoma State, so he's got the Big 12 ties, but Urban hired him away to come to Ohio State, Mike Gersich. And then Chris Ash was obviously at Ohio State. So, like, these are all going to be guys Herman is completely comfortable with because they have the Urban blessing pretty much.
Right,
so
right.
It should – that smells like it should be a fit.
It smells like popcorn in my house too. I
that's a good smell.
I know. And it's got me hungry, even though I shouldn't be hungry. I just ate supper not too long ago. Had some barbecue chicken. It was great, but in quarantine, I can't eat enough food. It's a real problem I have. Just like the problem Minnesota has, they will not.
You know
be
what? I've been getting ice cream a lot since quarantine started. Having a cankering for ice cream.
A cankering? It's a sore you get in your mouth sometimes.
Well, whatever you want to call it.
what's your ice cream that you go to?
We usually like Blizzard, obviously.
Gary oh, Clay. You're not talking about like a tub no. that you keep in the freezer. You're going to DQ. And we had our first blizzards of the year last week, and I'd never had Oreo cheesecake. Whew, man.
See, I don't veer too much. I say Oreo, Butterfinger, Snickers every once in a while. When they brought Snickers back, I was like, oh, yeah. Went to that about 8-9 times in a row. But
the Butterfinger's
that's about all
a little
I deal
bit. With. Too peanut buttery for me. I'm with you. We're like a good Oreo Blizzard.
Oreos, I mean, it's the best.
Right, yeah.
Hard to veer away from.
Because it's the perfect cookie for ice cream because half of it already is the cream part, you know? So it's just – it's ideal for that kind of mixture. The reason why – I just love the little cheesecake bits, the fake cheesecake bits that they'll put in their Blizzards. Very good. Very
Taylor's cheesy. Big on the turtle pecan.
That's a little too rich for my liking.
She got trigger shy about the new. Have you seen the new frosted animal cracker flavor they have?
No.
Like, you know the frosted animal crackers you can buy at the store?
Very good, but also I'm sure just loaded with sugar. Because, like, regular animal crackers, you tell yourself, this is a cracker. It's not a cookie. But then you get them frosted.
I love animal crackers. I can't do that. Frosted, I'm not big on. That's the new Blizzard flavor.
Huh. Interesting. Also, very underrated if you just do the Sonic knockoff. They have real ice cream in all their shakes, and it's right
Culver's. Do y'all do Culver's at all? Do y'all
no,
know about you?
I hate the guy who says Culver's concrete mixer. It's Culver's concrete. He's got Wisconsin.
It's good. Yeah.
Oh my God, it's so Wisconsin.
Hey, Wisconsin, they know food, man.
I'm sure they know their dairy well, but Culver's concrete good. Mixer.
I hear you.
Which I like where you got Wisconsin, Minnesota. Really, you think Mike Sanford can have an offense that's in the top 25? Get the hell out of here, Lucas.
That's the scary part because they have the pieces on offense, but you look at their defense and they lost a lot. Like, this is the one team where if you ask me to, like, all right, tell me a team who it could go really bad for, like, things could get really sideways. This team would be my pick. Like, is Tanner Morgan that good, or was he just throwing to a bunch of pros last year?
Right, right.
And if you look at the defense really falls off, who knows?
The one team that we've talked at length on here about that I'm kind of with you, if Kellen Mond like steps up, A&M, the way the schedule, that's been well documented.
It's all the schedule.
I didn't know you hated Coach O, though. That's kind of odd of you to hate Coach O. Not even going to finish.
Dude,
in the top
it's 10. Just they just lost a lot, and I'm not big on Miles Brennan, the new quarterback. Now if they get JT Daniels, we can start maybe talking a little higher.
USC kid? Is he in the portal right now? Is that like a recruiting thing that's happening? Okay.
But like also like how much was Joe Brady bringing to that table? Like if you think he was what we talked about him being and he's gone now, like just like a year ago, their Ensminger was they were getting in the I formation in the red zone in front of place. And then Brady gets there and everything changes. I mean, I know at the end of the season it got like where Brady was getting too much attention and everybody tried to shift it and saying Ensminger was doing more, but I mean, I don't know. We'll see.
Like how much is Ensminger going to keep in?
And they replaced Joe Brady with Scott Linehan, the old Cowboys offensive coordinator, who is like as old school, you know, just old school pro style as it gets.
Right.
So, like, and then you lose Aranda on the other side, who was awesome. It was an awesome defensive coordinator. And you replace him with Bo Pelini, you know. Bo Pelini.
Crazy
dude coming in there and just going to yell his head off.
We need Bo Pelini to have a tiger, like a cat painted like a tiger to, like, hold up when he comes out at Tiger Stadium, you know.
And this, for Orgeron, it's this year's all about proving, like, last year just wasn't a one-off. Like, that they just had an offensive savant came in, tuned some changes up. All of a sudden, their quarterback becomes the best thing ever, and then all the skill positions all around him, they just all turn into hits.
Right.
Like, we need to prove that just wasn't a one-time, like, the greatest team LSU will have, like, a once-in-generation type ride. We'll see.
The question I have for you that I'm kind of with you on Penn State. You got Penn State fourth ahead of Notre Dame, so I'm guessing you're thinking this is going to be one of those years that come out. But the thing about Penn State is Sean Clifford never really, like, popped for me. Like, he seemed, like, fine, but not I'm going to go out and win the biggest game. Like, I'm not going to go out and
beat Ohio State. Is quarterback. If they had a quarterback, they could legit compete for the top two or three spot, I think. But it's just quarterback. Now they're bringing in Minnesota's offensive coordinator, Kurt Soraka, who I thought did a really good job. And they're going to have a nasty defense. Like, Micah Parsons is going to be, like, by November, everybody's going to talk about how much of a freak Micah Parsons is and that he's going to be top two or three pick. And then they're loaded at every – I think they're loaded at every other position. It's just that quarterback spot. It's what do you believe in? But when you look at their schedule, they have to go to Michigan, so that's a little tricky. But other than that, it's pretty smooth sailing. They got to go to Virginia Tech in the non-conference. But on a talent standpoint alone, they should be able to handle that. And then you get Ohio State at home, and they play Ohio State as tough as anyone every year. And they always get somebody, it seems like, in that night game in Happy Valley when they do the whiteout.
Right.
So if you can pull that upset Ohio State, like in whenever that game is, they would have the driver's seat to go and win the Big Ten title. And then you're looking at Franklin finally breaking through and making that playoff.
Got to go through Justin Fields, though.
Yeah.
Dude's good.
And Justin Fields was one time committed to Penn State.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. How the turntables. How the turntables. Well, like it. This has been fun. This was a good podcast.
And think how much things are different if Fields just goes to Penn State. Like, it's a good fit right away from the jump.
Yeah, they would have had – he probably sits a year, right, with what's his name running around back there?
McSorley.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the offense is – I mean, that's kind of what McSorley was doing. Have him with K.J. Hamler last year. That's been fun. Man, Gross Matos, that dude's good. He's – I think he's going to be solid at the next level. That was a nice little second round pick. Yeah.
He's real long.
He used some meat and potatoes on him. And of all of the wild stories of that they tried to pigeonhole, like the sappy stories in the draft,
he's got a sappy one.
Man. And like, it's one of those that, like, you need the whole full thing because it is just – there was a college game day one where, like, I normally try to, like, all right, I don't want to cry on Saturday morning, but, man, I just, like, soaked it all in. Yeah. It was
– that's usually if I'm sitting down to watch college game day, that's when I go – do something.
Brush maybe your teeth.
Shower.
Right.
Yeah. I need to go take the dog on a walk kind of thing.
Yeah, but that one was one I got
don't need that early in my Saturday.
Oh, man, hit you right in the feels. And we hope we hit you right in the feels with just excellent podcasting. This has been a good one. We'll have another good one for you next week. And Luckett, you got anything else for all our fine folks listening out there across the Big Blue Nation?
I think that's all, man. Just recruiting is about to pick up, so we're going to have a lot to talk about, I think, here over the next couple weeks.
Yeah, and, you know, if Tennessee keeps on being Tennessee, we can always just fire off a tweet or something, get them all pissed off at us.
Doesn't take much to get Vol Twitter to take the bait.
Oh, man. And you know what? They're always going to respond with, "You in, Brad?" Which are like, "Pot, meet kettle." Like, come on. Like, what are you doing over here? Oh, congrats. You own Kentucky in football. Like, sick brag, bro. Like, just go take out
the best is when they start talking about Fulkerson.
Fuck you. Get the fuck out of here with all that nonsense. Thank you all so much for listening to 11 Personnel. As always, go Cats and go Cougars.